I mean, that is literally all I've got. Hello, it's been so long since you've done Brashcast, I can't remember how to start it.
Welcome to episode 50
of Brashcast.
A half century.
With me, Liam Pritchard, and as always, Ross Alexander. Is that how we open it?
Yeah.
All right, yeah, we're starting. Okay. Hello, welcome to episode. Oh, I've messed up. Hello, welcome to episode 50 of Brashcast with me, Liam Pritchard, and as always, Ross Alexander.
See, I mean, normally only do it once.
Once. Well, it's been a while. In fairness, the last time we said, "Oh, we'll be back next week," that was about
six months ago
almost.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry about that, but we're back briefly anyway. But this might be your last episode, mightn't it?
Yeah, possibly.
Which is ridiculous. We wait 6 months to finally do episode 50, and it might be your last episode. But we're not going to draw a line under it because, you know, we're going to see how the geography works out with wherever you end up moving.
Because maybe even do Skype or something.
Yeah, sadly Ross is being made homeless, so we've just got to, you know, we don't know where he's going to end up, and we're not going to do podcasts on the street. That'd just be weird. So we're just going to see
a really long extension cable.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just to the cigarette lighter in your car.
Yeah, and we're just do it. This is Liam and Ross broadcasting directly from a cardboard box. I don't think things are going to get that right.
Like, you won't let me in the car because I smell.
Yeah, of course. You've been homeless by this point for a couple of weeks and, you know, the smell is starting to get a little bit upsetting. So, yeah, you're not going anywhere near the fucking car, dude. But hopefully Ross will find a house and we'll be able to continue on. But for now, we're just going to, you know, episode 50. It's been a long time coming. And, of course, considering we haven't done a podcast since August, there is a whole shitload to talk about. The other problem is, I have forgotten the cable to the power cable for my MacBook, instead bringing the Wii U one, which I think you'll all appreciate looks almost exactly the same. So yeah, we're working to the clock here. Basically, we're just going to keep an eye on the battery and it ends when it ends.
We could have our very first lost episode.
We could have our first. Yeah, 50 episodes in, we've never had a lost episode and we've never had to edit a single... we edited about 10 seconds of one because somebody rang the doorbell once, didn't they?
Yeah,
that's about it. But that wasn't our fault. Jesus Christ, we keep this show flowing.
Yeah,
so we're just going to jump into a whole bunch of topics. We're going to run through them relatively quickly for time purposes. But I guess, considering that it is now January, we should have a look at our Game of the Year selection. I guess the one I looked at most recently was IGN's, which was Dragon's Age. And I got to be honest, Dragon Age Inquisition. I played like 2 hours of that and I just wasn't in the mood for it. So I can't, like, one, I can't judge because I've only played 2 hours. And the other thing is, I look back now and I'm like, that's a game I have to give another go to. Because, you know, like, I played Mass Effect for the first time, I remember, and I was just like, oh, I'm not feeling this. But I realized I was just not in the right mood.
Have you played the first Dragon Age?
I haven't played the first one. I played the second one, but everyone tells me the second one's shit.
It's got its moments.
Yeah.
But it's really not very
good. Didn't grab me the second. I gave it like 8-9 hours, and it didn't grab me.
Yeah.
But that's the problem with this. Like, there was enough there, even though I wasn't in the mood, to think, you know, this is obviously a well-made game. It's clearly worth giving a go to. But what happens if I actually enjoy it? That's what scares me the most.
I can tell you exactly what, because basically over the Christmas period, like, I've only played 2 AAA games in the last year, really, to completion.
Okay, so your
Dragon Age.
So your top two games are just the 2 games you've played.
Dragon Age and Wolfenstein.
Okay, so they're 1 and 2, in order.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, Dragon Age is fantastic. I sunk 65 hours into Dragon Age.
Oh my god! See, that's what I'm worried about.
Basically, what happened was, I acquired the copy in November, even though I really shouldn't have taken it because I had coursework to submit.
You might as well have just started a drug habit and a month before your exam.
I was really well behaved. And I've actually not played Skyrim in like the last probably almost a year.
Which for you is absolutely amazing, yeah.
I did dip a toe back in Fallout 3 and that was a mistake.
Oh dear God. I won't go near those games.
So I was like maybe 20 hours in by the time the Christmas holidays started.
Yeah.
We got 2 weeks. It's fantastic getting 2 weeks off for Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that is awesome.
And so I was like, right, I'll get my coursework finished. And I did. I got a portfolio sent off.
Yeah, very grown up of you.
Yeah. Just before...
See, that's the difference between playing games and a drug habit. There's never anyone who's like, I'll get this coursework done before I stick this needle in my arm.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only difference I can tell in regards to playing Dragon Age and, you know, doing heroin, but other than that.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's what they're going for.
Yeah.
But, so we ended up, I got all my portfolio stuff sent off at 20 hours, and then in that kind of 1.5 week period, I logged over 40 hours.
Jesus, so you were literally just on it all the time.
Basically, that was making up for a year's worth of really not
playing. Not playing games, yeah. So you just completely
binged.
It
made it really difficult to record a podcast about video games when I was like, no!
No, no. Just, this is it.
I mean, I'm getting paid to play PB, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you know that one pretty well, at least. But so you would say it is obviously worth playing then, Dragon Age.
I really enjoyed it.
I mean, can you... Right, I know, I appreciate, obviously, you haven't had a chance to play nearly as many games as you would have liked this year, but is it that quality where you think it might well have been your game of the year anyway?
Well, yeah.
It's like, in that kind of bracket.
It was the one I was waiting for. I'm a big fan of RPGs, especially Western RPGs.
I guess that's where we kind of differ. I mean, even Western RPGs, like, my favourite Western-style RPG is Dragon's Dogma, which is a Japanese take on the Western RPG, so it gives you an idea of where we're coming from there. But you also played Wolfenstein, and I famously was completely underwhelmed. Yeah, I got a lot of grief for that online for saying that I just wasn't all that
first. It's just flame.
Yes, or, oh god, I'll tell you about the other article I wrote. I got a lot of shit for that too. But yeah, I just thought it was, while it was well made, I thought it was just utterly, like, it was just average to me. It just wasn't anything special. I didn't think the old school mechanics really added a great deal. I thought the combination, I liked the fact that they took the story seriously, but then I just personally didn't think it fitted with the gameplay. And although the mechanics were very strong, some of the level design, like, I was playing it on hard, and to go back to it, my problem was it was a piece of piss even on hard for like 90% of the game, but then you'd hit these absolute brick walls, and all I could put it down to was poor level design.
The final boss fight,
I didn't even bother getting to it. I got like 70% into the game. I was just like, I'm not enjoying this anymore.
I'm trying to think, because I guess spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers. Yeah, it'll be fine.
There was a couple of bits. Largely fighting the two, like the super soldiers, like really big mix.
There was a bit on a bridge which drove me insane. Where you're like, the bridge is kind of like a bit busted, and you're kind of making your way up the bridge almost, because it's kind of on a slant, and there's guys above, and it just seemed to be, they just kept spawning and spawning.
It wasn't that bit for me. It was when, I had Hamish.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Scottish guy comes and picks you up in the
helicopter,
and then drops you off further down, which wasn't really necessary anyway.
That bit's annoying as hell. Terrible level design.
Like, it drops you off, and you can stay on the gun, but you will get shot to shit.
Yeah.
Or you can jump out into guys that are clearly designed to be taken down with the big gun first.
Yeah.
Really, really difficult.
That bit was annoying, and then I remember there was like a bit at the end where you had to, like, the trains are all kind of half busted and stuff, and you make your way and you fall into one of the roofs. It just wasn't signposted well, and I remember twice I just kind of jumped off the edge because I didn't know maybe it was me being an idiot, but you just thought, in the best games, those kind of linear games, like stuff, if you look back to something like Half-Life 2, that doesn't happen. It just has that knack of easing you in the direction without you even noticing it. It's like you're going the way, but it's not like this big signpost. It's just naturally, I say naturally, very carefully designed to kind of ease you that way without hitting you over the head with it. Whereas Wolfenstein tried to do that, but the design behind it wasn't strong enough.
A little bit frantic. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I said, we're talking, I'd say, like a 6 or a 7 out of 10. It wasn't a bad game. I was surprised.
I would probably rate it an 8.
I'd lean more towards a 6. It was it wasn't bad. I just didn't get.
I thought the mechanics saved it. Like, the actual gunplay was fun, and it was the gunplay was good. Yeah. The guns were fun to use.
Yeah. Oh, they were. Like, the thing is, I look back and I think about it, I like just about everything in that game, other than a few moments of poor level design and just poor difficulty spikes, which just didn't feel natural to the rest of the game. But hey.
Well, the thing is, while I was playing it, I was also, I've been on a real kind of hardcore classic sci-fi binge recently. So I've read a couple of books that were specifically, one was because it's an inspiration for the Fallout series, which is called A Canticle for Leibowitz, and it's basically about this order of monks that lives in solitude, but if they find like blueprints or any kind of basically anything to do with technology, they hoard it and keep it safe, so that when mankind's ready for the technology,
they'll release it and
they can have it. So obviously that's got really strong ties to Fallout. From that, I went to a book called Man in the High Tower, which is a Philip K. Dick, the guy that wrote essentially Blade Runner.
Yeah, most of the sci-fi kind of...
Oh, he's really good author. He only really became appreciated kind of from the 80s onward. He was kind of written off when he was still writing.
Yeah.
But so it's called Man in the High Tower, and it's another what if the Nazis won.
Oh, okay, story. Yeah. So similar to the Wolfenstein, yeah.
No, that's the thing. Same idea as Wolfenstein, but tonally, completely.
Yeah. No metal dogs or anything like that. No.
Well, I haven't finished it yet. So.
Yeah. I doubt they're going to show up at this point. It'd be late in the game if they're going to throw in kind of metal bionic dogs in, like, you know, the last chapter or something.
But it was really funny trying to reconcile the two in my head. Trying to place them in the same world.
Yeah.
That was quite amusing.
Yeah, Wolfenstein is, let's be honest, absurd.
But that's the thing, I love about it.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's weird because, like, the gunplay is ridiculous. The actual storyline is utterly absurd. And the universe created is quite ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But then they do take it very seriously.
It's very macabre.
Yeah. It's an odd one.
It's brutal.
But, yeah, I mean, neither of those games would make my list for, you know... I wasn't first on Wolfenstein and Dragon's Age. I haven't played enough. But, yeah, I mean, some of my choices did get a bit of groove. Because, I mean, my top three were South Park, Mario Kart 8, and Titanfall for the year.
No, I totally lied. I did play games last year. Because I completed South Park. I just totally forgot.
That was this year. South Park is a fantastic game. And one of... probably the funniest video game I've ever played.
My issue with South Park is just that the gameplay itself wasn't very strong.
I thought it was... I've heard that, and I totally get that argument. But I thought for the kind of game it was absolutely pitch perfect. It was like a 10-hour RPG.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad that the mechanics weren't too intensive.
Yeah.
I thought they did just enough with the battles to kind of keep you plodding along. But when I look back, what I'll always remember is the fact that it literally felt like a 10-hour episode of my favourite TV show.
That's what I really enjoyed.
And, you know,
they went further in that game than I've ever seen them go in the show.
And that's some of the stuff I was literally like, I cannot believe they're doing this.
We were watching the censored version.
But they did a great job. The censored version only made you notice what was happening all the more.
David, with his head in his hands.
It's just, it's ridiculous. They dealt with it so well. And it's like, you look at censorship and what goes on in that game and what they actually censored. And you're like, what is the point?
Like, the thing is...
you know, what is the point of picking out these handful of moments in a game which is absolutely rife with genuinely shot... if I can go through an abortion clinic killing Nazi aborted babies, but I can't see someone, you know, take a dildo in the ass. Come on now. Like, it's just ridiculous where the lines in the sand are drawn. Yeah. But the fact that
it's the actual act itself that they took issue with.
Yeah.
Because later on, you go inside Mr. Slave.
Yeah, it's
and that was grotesque.
Yeah, it's almost as if they kind of, as always, they're incredibly aware of, you know, the ridiculousness of all it. And they kind of, you know, in a very clever way, you know, take issue with it. But, and that, you know, it's what they've done in the show for years and what they did in the game as well as they've done in the show. And that was the big thing, was that the writing, the satire, was at the level that the show is. I still think one of the best levels I've ever played. And I can't believe it. I literally wrote an article a couple of days ago. It was about Bayonetta 2, which was literally fourth on my list. The final stage of that, I wanted to write about it because it was one of the best stages I've ever played in a video game. And then I wrote a list of my top 10 kind of stages.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot about the one where you're battling when you've been shrunk down.
And the testicles.
And in the background, there's just that out of focus. And it's just that idea that you're battling in this miniaturized version as your parents are having sex behind you.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. I mean, it was gross.
Yeah.
But it was more when you stop and thought, it's like, those are his parents. It's just so fucked up. But yeah, South Park, I've actually put in third. And this is all much of a match. It's very close. Mario Kart came in a very, very close second.
I have played Mario Kart. It was one of the best ways I think I possibly could have... basically, Stuart, who's been on the podcast before, and a bunch of us, we all went around to Stuart's and we had a Nintendo Day. Because he'd just taken shipment of Super Smash Brothers.
That was also close. The only reason that's possibly on there is because while I own it, I haven't played it enough to really judge it. But that's the thing, though. We're still at that point where if you're gonna have a gaming day with your friends, Nintendo's still best.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Like, the thing is, a year ago, the Wii U was laughable because, you know, the PS4 and Xbox One, it was like, look at all these games that are coming out for it, which of course have now been pushed into
Yeah, they didn't get, are the ones where they just didn't work. Like, you know, the quality of Nintendo was shone through so much this year. Mm. We've had so many first-party and third-party games on the Xbox One and PS4 when they've shown up, and, you know, beyond day one patches, games just haven't worked. Yeah. We're not going to go into that. It's already been covered. Mm. But then you get games like Mario Kart and Smash Brothers with so much content, but they're polished within an inch of their life. The fact is, Nintendo do not release games until they're ready.
It's still because I'm convinced that Nintendo don't believe in the internet.
I don't think they do. But the thing is, their games work on the internet. And that's the other thing. Like, Mario Kart 8, I've played it online.
Yep.
It's super fun. I haven't played Smash Brothers, but I hear it works.
Yeah.
Nintendo, they just don't work to these deadlines. They're just like, listen, if it's not done, we're not going to damage the reputation. And this goes right back to the 80s, to that initial vision of, you know, the seal of quality or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And that still holds true today for the, you know, they have their issues like anyone else. But when you look at the market, and it was a slightly depressing year for games which were just flat out broken and didn't work.
Yeah.
And you could just always fall back on Nintendo. No massive day one patches. You just turn it on, it works, and it plays fantastically. Mm. And not only that, Nintendo, who have been so DLC shy, have literally released arguably the best DLC ever come across.
The
Mario Kart 8. The Zelda level was great, but the F-Zero one was even better.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. And the price of it as well, I got both packs for like £14. Mm. And that includes like, what is it, 16 new tracks? And all these...
Isn't that many?
Yeah, because you get 8 with the first set. There's 2 championships in each set. So the first championship is like leads up to F-Zero, and the second one leads up to Zelda, and it's got a combination again of all new tracks and rebuilt tracks for Mario Kart 8. Yes, I was surprised when I got it, but it's so altogether for the 2 packs I bought, that's 16. That's 4 championships. That's essentially a new Mario Kart game.
Yeah,
and you get all those new characters. And I was just like, I'm not big on DLC, but I'm like, there's no way I'm not getting an F-Zero theme. And Mario Kart 8, again, is a fantastic game, but bizarrely enough, I've never really been an online shooter guy. I kind of dip a toe. But Titanfall, I just thought, I've literally not stopped playing, not all the time, but I've kept going back to it all year. And again, it's one of the few games where I've bought the DLC. It was because it was on sale.
Yeah.
But it's just such a slick game. I just love the combination of the movements, of the mechs. It just seems like I played Advanced Warfare, and Advanced Warfare is good, and the jumping around makes a difference.
I played it when I went home for Christmas. It certainly has taken a lot of cues from Titanfall.
Oh, yeah, but the thing is, as soon as I'm playing, I'm just like, I wish this had Titans. I totally wish this had giant robots.
See, that's
in it.
The element of Titanfall that I don't like. Titans.
I love the Titans. Again, whether I'm on foot or I'm in a Titan, it just works. It's so perfectly balanced, and it's one of these games which has been oddly bashed. Despite all the hype beforehand, it seems to be people's opinion has swayed the critics, and, you know, people seem to look back on it as almost like it wasn't a fantastic game, and I genuinely think it's a brilliant, brilliant game. One, which is, all right, albeit when it was released, it had limited game modes, and I probably didn't notice as much because I'm not, like, hardcore into it. I kind of dip
a toe,
but...
On the other hand, it did have the benefit of not really having very much competition.
Yeah, there is that, but...
Battlefield 4 is still not great.
No, sir, still not great, which is ridiculous. But, you know, they've added the co-op mode to Titanfall and, you know, an array of additional modes, and it's just... it's easily my favourite online shooter of all time. Mm-hmm. Easily. And, you know, I look back over the year and I just think, what's the game I've kept going back to? And it's Titanfall. But again, you know, on a different day, that could be Mario Kart 8. It could be South Park.
I mean, I just played little snippets of Titanfall on the Office Xbox One. Sometimes, you know, if I had to wait around for something after work, I would go in and play a few games of it.
Yeah,
it is good fun. It's very.
I know it's not for everyone, but it like, you know, when a game just clicks for you and it pulls you into a genre which you're not usually like. I like first person shooters, but I usually just play campaigns. Mm-hmm. I dip a toe because, you know, I've got the game. I'll give the online a go. But this has been the first game which has genuinely dragged me in.
Problem
and that's probably
I have
why
with playing games like that online is that normally the barrier to entry, by the time I get round to it, I always play the campaign first.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
If anything...
Well, you can't win Titanfall. You play, but that's one of the things, I think, because I went straight into the... I was playing the campaign, but the campaign's online.
Yeah.
And maybe because I jumped straight in... Because one of the reasons as well is because I'm actually okay at Titanfall.
It kind of like, forced you to get used
yeah,
to
yeah. So, like, I played Titanfall, and I'm usually at least getting kind of, like, a 50-50. You know, yeah. You get days when you get your ass handed to you. Whereas, like, I jumped into Battlefield 4 late, and I'm not sure if it's because I jumped in late or it didn't click with me, but I got my ass handed to me at Battlefield 4. Yeah. I was gap. And I'm okay at Call of Duty. I just dip a toe into that. I feel like I can usually... Again, you run into a pro team, they're going to decimate you. But for the most part, I can just stroll into Call of Duty and I can do okay. Mm-hmm. Battlefield 4, oh my God.
The mechanics of Battlefield 4 are what make it difficult, I think. Because if you don't have team spawning on, you are spawning miles away from the fight. And before you actually get back into the fight, there's a good chance that maybe a sniper knows the route that you're likely to take.
And when you're trying to learn the game, it can be depressing. But
Battlefield 3... was probably towards the later, like basically after I stopped playing Rainbow Six Vegas, Battlefield 3 was probably my favourite online. Well, actually no, because there were so many, like Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 was good. I loved the Vegas series of Rainbow Six.
No, I like
Gears
those.
Gears of War was good.
I got into Gears of War briefly. Bizarrely enough, the first Battlefield on the Xbox 360, and it was cross-generation with the original Xbox. It was like
Battlefield
Advanced Warfare or something like that. You know, they're all called something like that. Yeah. Or Battlefield Modern Combat.
Modern Combat sounds right.
That, I played that loads. I was so hooked on that. I think it was because I'd never played an online shooter before, and it looked so nice on the 360 at the time.
That was the one that had the quick switching, wasn't it? You could look at
it. Yeah. And skip over, in the single player. But I got quite into that one, but... But yeah, I got a few others, just honourable mentions. Shadow of Mordor was close.
I really, really want to play
that. Dude, you should totally play it.
I
think love that game.
Console because
the current gen is supposed to be garbage.
Because the last gen ones don't have the Nemesis system.
Oh, so that makes
which
it.
Which is like the mechanic. Yeah, like, fair enough, the combat's basically Batman.
Yeah. But it does it. Like, it's quite simple in many respects, but it's just addictive. And that is what makes it addictive, the Nemesis system. The world itself is kind of like, it's basic. Like, there's not much there, but it looks nice. But as great as Shadow of Mordor is, it's one of those games you think, all right, this is great. The sequel should be fantastic. Because you can see just... Because the fundamentals are all there. It's like, if you build a slightly more interesting story and a slightly more well-rounded world, then
It has the advantage of, I mean, let's be honest, blatantly ripping off Assassin's Creed parkour and Batman combat.
Yes, it does. But it does it so well.
But if you're going to steal from the best.
Yeah, and if you're going to steal, you've got to do it at least as well as they do it. And arguably, I mean, I think the combat might be even better than Batman's. It's certainly in the same ballpark, but that was probably the surprise of the year for most people in terms of quality. But yeah, that's great.
I will play that, but that's going to have to wait.
Forza Horizon 2, I absolutely loved.
Gorgeous looking game.
Oh, and I tell you what, that brings me to another game. Everyone keeps ragging on about Drive Club. Drive Club, right, has some of the best lighting I've seen
rain
in a game.
The
rain effects are amazing. But when I kept going back, because I was going back and forth between Forza and Drive Club at the time, and I kept going back to Forza, one, because it's a much better game.
Mechanics,
much better game. And two, it reminds you how far art design will get you. Because as great as Drive Club, it's just so bland. Yeah. Right down to the menus. Like, I got on okay with the mechanics. They're okay. It doesn't handle nearly as nicely as Forza, but that could be a personal taste thing. But while you go back to Forza, go, okay, this doesn't have the incredible lighting.
It's only have a habit of doing that.
Although you'd expect it because it's a track racer. Like, Forza's open world.
Yeah.
But then I kept going back to Forza, and I was like, this is the world I'd prefer to spend my time in. It just looks... And with the music, it's just got a whole vibe to it. Like, don't get me wrong, it's right up my alley, that kind of arcade-style racing, that kind of borderline style. But then, so is Drive Club. But I just found it, as great as it looked technically in some respects, it just looked bland to me. And everything about the game was just a bit bland. And it just didn't feel like a game which had been held back a year at all. But I tell you what, those rain effects are fucking off the chain.
I tell you what, man, like, have you heard of Assetto Corsa?
A what?
Assetto Corsa. It's a PC.
Oh, no, yeah, I read a review for it last night on Eurogamer. They gave it a 9. It's supposed to be, it looked fantastic.
It's gorgeous.
But it's proper simulation, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not for me.
There's also Project Cars.
That looks amazing as well.
Which is the one that pretty much everyone's waiting for.
But again, simulation. It looks the business.
But across such a wide range of cars.
Yeah, I just like throwing cars into corners. The thing is, two of the biggest smiles on my faces I've had playing games this year. One was Bayonetta 2. Slight spoiler alert, I won't go into the story, but the last stage, I've warned you, this is only going to take a second, is essentially an Afterburner homage.
Alright, cool.
Which it somehow combines, you still feel like you're playing Bayonetta, but you're also playing Afterburner at the same time, and it's absolutely amazing. But then also in Forza, they have, there's tons you can do, but one of them are these bucket list challenges, and one of them's called Outrun the Sun, and of course you're driving like a Ferrari F50 or F40, whatever it's called, and you're driving as the kind of, it goes down, the sun's going down, and they kind of always, they pick the music for you, and it's just like, this is as close as I'm going to get to playing Outrun 3, and it's just fantastic. But Forza Horizon 2, I just think it's one of those, like, I still see Drive Club in the charts, and I'm like, are people buying this just because there's no other first party games for PS4? Because it's just okay. It's an okay game, but it's Forza 2 is just in a different ballpark.
It's a game that's now defined by the troubles it had at launch.
Yeah, totally. And it always will be, sadly. But the only other one, it won't be everyone's cup of tea, but I really enjoyed Sunset Horizon as well. I thought that was... Did I say Sunset Overdrive? I just combined the two, yeah. Sunset Overdrive, yeah. I thought, I was a little worried that I was going to have like a douchey sense of humour based on the advert, but it was actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
The mechanics are like very Jet Set Radio almost, but it was such an interesting world, like visually. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Like, you know, I didn't 100%, I completed the campaign. I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I spent like 8 hours, 10 hours, whatever it was. And I was like, that's enough, but thoroughly enjoyed my time with it. But yeah, they're my games of the year. I guess we should have a quick mention of Lizard Squad can just suck balls. I hate them the worst. Just to be clear, they're a group of douchebags who decided that they were going to attack Christmas. Yeah. What are you going to go after, guys? What are you going to prove your point? We're going to attack children's Christmas presents.
Yeah.
And Matt, right, you look back to your childhood. I think to that day, like, I'm not sure if it's the same. I'm sure it is the same for you. Some of the most memorable Christmas moments I've got are opening consoles. Like, when I went back and I got my NES and I got my Mega Drive, and I can't even imagine what it would have been like if I plugged in my Mega Drive on Christmas Day and it's like, sorry, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
I would have just been devastated. And you can imagine what it's like for parents. They don't know our PSN network. They just think, this console doesn't work.
It does strike me as
I could just kill them.
I suppose you don't get discs anymore, you just get cards.
Yeah.
I suppose that was the problem people were having.
Well, no, because when you, like, if you get a PS4 and Xbox One, you've got to update it before and you've got to log in online and stuff. And the fact is, they couldn't because the network was down.
So
I get, like, I'm not for it, but whatever. If you want to kind of, you know, your little group, that you want to attack Microsoft and the PlayStation and like, oh, we want to show that, you know, how easy it is to take them down. Mm. And fair enough, because obviously in the past, Sony have had problems when they lost everyone's credit cards. Mm. But to do it on Christmas Day, get fucked!
It's that whole thing of couching it under noble intentions. Oh, we only did it to show you... Like, a lot of people do it for jobs.
Yeah.
They're getting hired as...
Well, they actually came out and said, and I believe I quote verbatim, we did it for the lols. The fucking lol.
I don't know how representative their Twitter is of who they were. Like, there were so many Twitter feeds claiming to be them.
Well, I hate them. I just think it was an abhorrent kind of act. It's like, why would you do that? Why would you go after people's Christmas presents? Do it in the middle of the year. Don't do it on Christmas.
I hate DDoSers because they threaten my livelihood.
Well, the thing is, a lot of them, you know, they'll kind of hide behind this whole idea that they're being righteous. They're just being dicks for the sake of it.
I mean, it's
not all of them, but a lot of them.
It's the same with a lot, not all, of the GamerGators as well.
Yeah.
Or it's about ethics and journalism. Yeah, well, maybe for, like, some of you.
Yeah, it's not at all. But again, that's a whole other podcast, and we are quickly running out of battery, sadly.
Okay.
Yeah, in terms of news, you know, there's a new line of Amiibos. I am not collecting those. That is a dangerous game.
Have you got any of them? Did you get any for Christmas?
I got Mario with Super Smash Brothers.
All right, cool.
And I might get Pikachu because Pikachu's my favourite character to play with.
Yeah.
And I do like Pikachu. Well, but I'm worried if I get
Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, he just calls that lightning. It's a I hate that.
Yeah, he's a dick.
No one likes playing against Pikachu.
No, because he's a pain
small
in the ass.
And he's fast.
Yeah.
And
probably why I like playing with
it. That move is OP.
Yeah, I haven't played enough of the characters, but I like, naturally, I just quite like Pikachu. But that's the only one I've got.
I got Donkey Kong.
You got Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Oh, he's cool. That's what I'm worried about, though. I've got Mario. I'll just get Pikachu.
Select characters.
I'm worried that it could just escalate. I was literally in Argos today, and we're supposed to be buying a bin, and they had a few Amiibos on the floor. I was like, oh, I do like this Samus Aran one. It's like, oh, look, the Pikachu. And then I start thinking about all the other ones, and they're releasing like a Toad one and a new Mario, and I'm just like, all right, I've got to...
Have you played Treasure Tracker? Or?
No. I played, obviously, Mario Galaxy, so I essentially played the basis, but I do plan on getting that, and it does look fantastic. It's Amiibos, very dangerous, but I will be doing the same as you, getting a few.
Captain Falcon is probably my favourite one to play. But he's one of the rare ones, unfortunately.
Yeah. And you've seen what they're going for online. It's outrageous.
They're re-releasing Marth now.
Yeah.
So at least you'll be able to get a new Marth.
So that's the thing, though. I don't want to start collecting them. That's the dangerous thing, because they're just going to keep releasing them. They're going to be... You already notice on the box now, it says the Super Smash Brothers collection. And
just announced the Mario Party.
Exactly, ones. Yeah. And there's going to be ones for every game coming out. So yeah, got to be careful with that. Can you afford it? Oh, you are now running on reserve battery. We're okay for a little bit longer. PS4's 18 million consoles sold. Absolutely amazing figures. Still don't know how they do it. They seem to be running off the back of Xbox's fuck-up still. Because, I've got all three consoles, and the PS4 is still largely sitting there.
It's a case of becoming the market leader, I think. That's what's happened, and then in the psyche... I mean, think about it. Developers don't plan on what game they're going to bring out next year. They plan what they're going to bring out in 3 years.
Yeah.
So they'll have seen... what the PlayStation, like the lead that the PlayStation took.
Totally.
And that's how exclusives happen.
But it hasn't happened yet, and there's still not a great sign of them. The thing is, I think a large part of it is literally that, all right, it got out the blocks, it was, you know, had all the right messaging. People went out and bought the PlayStation 4 for the right reason, because the Xbox's messaging was completely fucked up. Yeah. And it simply comes down to the fact then, because we're such an interconnected world in terms of gaming, it's like, what have my friends got? Everyone's got a PS4, I'll buy a PS4. And it's just having that horrible knock-on effect, and Microsoft is still trying to catch up, despite the fact that in terms of exclusives, they're quite a bit ahead. I can't think of a single... PS4 exclusive, which has really blown me. I've liked quite a few.
They're still kind of waiting on Uncharted, I think.
Yeah, like Second Son was okay, Drive Club was okay, Killzone was okay.
There's nothing that I would say Xbox has, though.
I mean, I've liked like Forza, Titanfall. I'd even go as far as say as I enjoyed Dead Rising
Titanfall,
3.
I guess Titanfall was PC.
And yeah, but I still think it's like, in terms of console gaming, though, I think most people would say. I mean, the Master Chief Collection, I mean, again, if you're not a Halo fan, that had its problems, of course, as well.
Don't get me wrong.
But
you know,
Sunset.
It's gorgeous, and a lot of people appreciate being able to play Halo 2 again.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you're still just repackaging an old game.
Yeah, but at least the only argument I make for that, and I do agree, is that at least it's something you can't play. You can't play Halo 1 and 2. Well, you can never play Halo 1 online. These are new things. Whereas something like
20 gig patch.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous patch. Like, I'm not defending the technical deficiencies of that game, but, like, you know, PS4's got The Last of Us, but that is literally come, like, 6 months after the PS3 version. And as much as, like, I love that is a masterpiece of a game, it's like, I don't need to play that again yet. I can just play it on the PS3, But, I mean, it'll be a very interesting year, and I expect the PS4 to continue their lead. The Xbox One has, like, sold, I think it was confirmed yesterday that it won for the second month in America. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, it's picking up. It's taken some pretty major sales.
I've got my full contract to be renewed soon, and I'm really considering getting a console with
it. Yeah.
Because it's like an extra tenner.
Yeah.
But then, if you work that out over 24 months,
that's not
extra tenner,
240 quid.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Yeah. Do you know what you'll get at PS4?
It's not as clear cut as it was a year ago.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, PlayStation brings out a lot of Japanese exclusives.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't really go for that many Japanese games these
days.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, personally, I mean, my friend asked me which one he thought I should get, and I was like, for me personally, as an owner of all the consoles, it's the Xbox One which gets played more. Mm. Some people don't like the interface. I actually quite like it. I find the PlayStation One a little bit bland. The PlayStation is a slick piece of kit, but the only game on the 1886, the more I see and hear about, I'm like, that could end up being a little bit average as well. But Bloodborne does look pretty dope.
You're a big Dark Souls fan.
Yeah, so like that's the big one for me. Whereas like Uncharted looks great, but I actually loved Tomb Raider. I actually preferred the last Tomb Raider to Uncharted 3.
Uncharted 3 was the weakest.
But I just thought as we mentioned before, the Uncharted, I love Uncharted, but I'm not the biggest fan of the combat sometimes, whereas I thought the combat and the open world of the last Tomb Raider, I was completely...
Have you seen the trailer for the new, like the gameplay?
For Uncharted,
yeah,
it was pretty slick. It does look amazing. So, it like for me though, it's like
I know I will get both consoles eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's a tricky choice, that one. If I had to choose, like, I'm obviously going to play both. But if I had to choose one or the other, Tomb Raider, I haven't seen enough of Tomb Raider, but Tomb Raider versus Uncharted, it's like, it's so close that that wouldn't be a deciding factor for me. It'd have to be on another game because I'd be like, I'm not going to lose. Whichever, unless they completely piss up Tomb Raider, I'm going on the basis of the quality of the last game. I'm like, whichever one I play, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
But, oh shit, we are really running out of time here. Movies, no Lego movie for animated feature at the Oscars, get fucked.
Yeah, that is a bit weird.
I did
see Book of Life at the cinema.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that made it into any of the
I don't think it did.
Gorgeous film.
Really?
Really, really good.
Is that the
Day of the Dead stuff?
Day of the Dead one. It might have, actually. It was the Studio Ghibli one. No, I don't think it did, actually. No. Anyway.
I think me and Carol were like the only four people, or one of it's four one, people to see it in Edinburgh.
It's one of the few animated, big animated cinema movies I haven't seen this year, but I saw Big Hero 6 advanced screening.
I really want to see that.
Awesome. Yeah, you'll love that. That's fantastic. Birdman is brilliant. I really hope Michael Keaton wins the Oscar for that, but we'll see. Whiplash, I'm going to see tomorrow. It's a film about drumming, which doesn't sound very exciting, but everyone who's banging on about it.
It's got J. Jonah Jameson in it. So.
It does indeed. And what's the kid's name? I like the fact that he's doing so well, because when I remember watching 21 and Over, which is an utterly gash film, and I was telling my friends, like, the film's garbage, but I was like, there's one kid in it, and I was like, there's something about him, like, he's gonna be big, and he's the kid from Whiplash, and he's the guy who's playing Mr. Fantastic in the Fantastic Four, which they're actually showing the trailers for at a movie which is coming out soon. But Fantastic Four?
Do not have a lot.
Really? I'm genuinely interested.
Doctor Doom is not a hacker.
Yeah, but I'm just going based on the guy's last film. So, I always forget the name of that film. The one I bought for you?
Chronicle.
Chronicle, yeah. I love that film. So, like, I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt. And if any film needed to do something completely different, it was Fantastic Four after the last movies. Next year, obviously, we are going to do another podcast, because if only to talk about all the films coming out next year. Jurassic Park, Star Wars, obviously, James Bond, Avengers. We're talking four films alone.
We can maybe make it an annual thing.
We're going to have to. But next time I'm going to have to remember the fucking plug, which is ridiculous. There's no point in going too far into anything else, because we are literally running out of time. So it's a bit of a cut price 50th episode, which seems ridiculous. The 50th should be all special. We should have fireworks and shit. Instead, we don't have a plug, which is absolutely ridiculous. But do you have anything like coming? I mean, are you planning on getting? Do you think you'll get the console pretty soon then with the contract?
I hope so. Yep. It's going to be a case of seeing how my finances line up.
But yeah, I guess you are moving house and stuff, aren't you? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, what else was there? Alien Isolation, played that. That was pretty sweet.
I really want to play that.
That is really good. I'm playing UFC at the moment, because I tell you what, one of the best deals in gaming at the moment is that EA locker thing, whatever it's called. Yeah.
Like a season pass game.
Yeah, well, it cost me £20 and I got Battlefield 4, Madden, last year's FIFA, Peggle 2, UFC, Need for Speed, Rivals, mm-hmm. all for £20.
That's
like for
bad.
The year. And I was like, they just keep adding games. I was like, I would have bought UFC anyway. So I'm like, this is going brilliantly. But if something happened. The radiator is kicking off late in the day. But I know this is, you know, potentially Ross's last episode. But all it really means is that this is probably going to be the last episode we do for at least a couple of weeks until we sort out exactly what's going on. I mean, are you actually going to be here for a few more weeks at least?
Yeah, I'll be here. It's going to be a case of, I don't actually have a place to move to yet. Which is utterly terrible.
Well, in that case then, how about we try and commit to at least a few more before you move? We'll see what happens, but I mean, are you around next week?
Yeah.
He's around next week. So this isn't Ross's last episode, and this is, we'll call this episode 40, no, we will call this episode 50, balls to it.
50.1.
We're just going to do an episode 51 spectacular. So, you know, there will be a plug next week. I won't be talking quite as fast, and we won't have to rush through things in such a haphazard manner. But please, you know, I hope you do join us next week for episode 51, the spectacular, and I hope you all have like a super awesome week and stuff. Catch you later.
See you
later. Bye.